I thought I did.
Turned our speaker system off, but if people can't hear, we may have to turn it back on, so I'm not sure how to.
Yeah, I'm not.
All right, it's 7:30. I'd like to call the August meeting of the Columbia County Board of Supervisors to order with a moment of silent prayer. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Bassin.
Here.
Robin Andrews.
Here.
Bratton.
Here.
Lawrence Andrews. Stats.
Here.
Hebany.
Here.
Nayer.
Here.
DeGroot.
Here.
Garrett.
Here.
Farika.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Bear.
Here.
Braley.
Yes.
Sterling.
Here.
Cross.
Yeah.
Thurston.
Here.
Hughes.
Here.
Scalera.
Here.
McDonald.
Here.
Benson. Morrell.
Here.
Knott.
Here.
Young.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have present 3102, absent 433, and you have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Supervisor Young.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we pay the bills, accept the treasurer's report, and file the minutes within the clerk's office.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second the motion.
A motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. I'd like to turn the meeting over for a minute to Supervisor Roy Brown, who's head of the Public Safety Committee. We've got a presentation by various Columbia County officials who were involved with the TCI fire, and also Supervisor Brown was present, I believe, from the start of the fire right through most of the next day. So on behalf of everybody, I'd like to thank him for his efforts as chairman of the Public Safety Committee. I'm going to turn it over to him to make introductions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, as you're all aware by now, that we had a little fire out at the TCI in the West Ghent Industrial Park. I'm going to ask that Sheriff Harrison come up, Emergency Management Director Bill Black, Lieutenant Lampier from the Sheriff's Office, and our Fire Coordinator, John Howe. They're going to lead you through kind of how the incident went down. We have other members of state agencies that are here that can help answer questions, talk about some of the things that went on that night. So I'll turn it over to the sheriff and Bill Black.
It seems every time I come before you people, I never have great news, but I want to kind of walk everybody through the events that happened last Wednesday, and what we plan on doing here this evening is we've brought some information which we've distributed to the supervisor about all the agencies that were involved countywide, statewide, federally, and what we hope to do is have you be able to answer questions related to each discipline, whether it be the fire, whether it be emergency management, whether it be State Department of Health, or DEC with a cleanup and/or questions related to some of the chemicals involved. So we'll start, and then we'll bring up the state agencies, and we'll go through it. At roughly 10:20 last Wednesday evening, they received a call from a key holder reporting a fire at TCI. The West Kent Fire Chief requested at 10:47 the command vehicle from the Sheriff's Office so that they could run some chemicals so that they knew exactly what they were dealing with. I left my residence right around 10:30 when I got the page, and I went right directly to the scene. And I met with John Howe and the fire chief and basically got an update. The decision was made very quickly. They made an interior attack on the building, and during the attack, they found out there were some chemicals in there that were water reactive. So the decision was made, a life safety issue was made, for the benefit of all the firefighters to pull everybody out, because there was nothing, the building was fully involved, there was nothing we were going to save, and we risked people not going home that evening. So the decision was made, we pulled everyone out of the building. At that point, we discussed, and this was roughly about 11:15, how we had a heavy plume of black smoke heading to the north. We discussed how we were going to deal with notification and or evacuations. We tasked notification to law enforcement, which involved New York State Police and the Columbia County Sheriff's Office. They were sent door to door to the north, and they started notification to tell people they could shelter in place or that we were opening a shelter at the Chatham Fire Station. So in the middle of all that, we did make notification to Chatham Fire and tell them you could have possibly 100 people coming your way, and we notified the Red Cross. And these things are all happening simultaneously. At roughly 12:30, now we're an hour into the law enforcement is making their notifications on the back road, which is Old Post Road, I believe. And 911 gets a call of an intruder, or at least that's what I understand. Well, we initially thought, you know, it's probably a law enforcement knocking on a door. It's scaring somebody. It's the middle of the night. Right after that, we get a notification, and this is pretty important, that we have a home invasion in progress. Half a mile... or a mile, roughly a little, just under a mile from the fire incident. They pull the call, state police get the call. First car in the scene is a sheriff, deputy sheriff. He gets out of the car and five people come out of the house and they try to run him over with their car. The chase is on, so he defends himself, and as the people are leaving after they try running the deputy over, state police pick him up at the end of the driveway and they start chasing him down the road. So he got through the first corner but didn't make the second corner and rolled his car. Now we have five armed suspects, because that's how it was reported, running through the woods towards the incident where we have 300 firemen. Life safety issue is decided at that point. We've got to catch these guys before we get into a hostage situation or they steal a car or a fire truck, because now they're coming right at us. So we were adapting to that situation, and we still have the fire going on. So you have to remember, now we got two issues going on. Our law enforcement have the people basically cornered, so we know where they are, so we can protect the residents that are in the houses still, we can protect the firemen, and they capture a few of them right off the bat. We didn't capture all of them until later in the morning when sun came up. So we'll go back to the fire. Because now my focus pretty much remained on the fire, although we had a notification procedure that was in place. We started having some severe explosions at the facility. We roughly counted roughly 10 explosions during the course of the early morning hours. I've been in fire service for a long time. I've never seen explosions like these. At that point, we went to, we decided to move the command center, which was down on 9H, and we activated the emergency operations center, and that was at 2:15 in the morning. At that point, we had already made notifications to New York State Office of Emergency Management. Mark Ferrari, who was the president in the room, Mark got there roughly around 1 o'clock in the morning, maybe 12:30. Stephen Kerr, the director of State Emergency Office of Emergency Management, was there. Everybody went to the EOC to start looking into how we get state assets into the county quickly to make these happen. At that point, roughly when the first explosion went off, which I believe was around 1 o'clock in the morning, we had a representative from New York State DEC, Matt Franklin, who was on the scene. So everyone was at the scene when we decided we have to take a step back. We have to protect people. We've got to pull assets back. We wanted everybody to go home. That decision was made, and it was the right decision because everybody did go home. This was a tragic and severe fire for any fire company, and our volunteers did a great job there. When we went to the EOC, we asked for representation from New York State DEC, which we already had. OEM was already on the scene, and we asked for representation from State Department of Health so we could start disseminating information. Our first press release went out at 3:26 in the morning to all the media. And we notified all the media channels, including our in-house county Facebook, 6-10-13, the newspapers. We used everything at our disposal to get the word out using the tools that we had. As the morning progressed, Columbia County Department of Health came in, and we tasked them with getting information on how do we decon fire trucks? How do we decon first responders? At that point, we don't know. We know what they're supposed to have in the building, but we don't have real good data on what's in the building. So we take worst case scenario and we decon the firemen, we decon the fire trucks, and we make sure that if there is a problem, because we don't know if there is or there isn't at that point, until testing comes back, we know that we've done everything and we've taken standard operating procedures for a fire service, for emergency responders, and we make sure that we take the safe way out of this. We make sure they don't take this home. And that's what we're taught. As we keep on going and we keep on working through the sequence of events, Columbia County Health Department came up with this method in conjunction with the State Department of Health. So we knew we had a good practice in place, and now we're looking for more information. How do we clean, equipment a little bit better? So we started asking all the real intricate questions, and how do we get this information out to the public? And that was our next step. How do we disseminate that? So what I'd like to do at this point, I'd like to have Nancy Winch come up. Nancy is our, as everyone knows, is our director of our health department. Nancy has people here from the state health department. I'd like to introduce those people, but before we do so, I would like to, there's going to be questions that are really kind of focused on either the fire, which John Howe can answer, law enforcement, which the sheriff can answer. Tom Lamphere is here to discuss the Facebook or reverse 911 or New York Alert, if anyone would like to ask those questions. And then we can get into questions with the State Health and New York State DEC. Sheriff?
I just want everybody to understand during this process of the evacuation, when the home invasion happened, and we were aware that we had people in the area, the decision was made to no longer offer people to leave because we were not aware of what was going to happen with these three people out that were still out in the woods. The decision was made at that point to have people shelter in place, and I know the big question has been, why wasn't everybody notified? The issue is, We don't have a way of doing it right now. For the last number of years, Rob Lopez, who's the director of 911, has looked at a reverse 911 system. It is expensive. It's not a cheap endeavor for the county to absorb. Over the years, it's been brought before the board. It's been talked about a number of times. And the decision was made to go with the New York Alert Program. The New York Alert Program is offered by the state, and there's no cost. It's a very good program. It does allow us to do reverse 911. However, at this point in time, all right, let me rephrase that. At the time that the incident occurred, we did not have access to the system. We had an agreement with them. We were inputting county employees at this point in time, but it is a very tedious and time-consuming process. It requires us to upload all the county employees, then upload all the departments. It's been taking us a while to get it done. About 2 weeks ago, the sheriff and Bill Black, who apparently have psychic capabilities, asked me to look into a reverse 911 system. On Monday, before the incident occurred, I had actually spent 2 hours going through a demo on reverse 911 and had a quote on Tuesday and brought it to the sheriff. The plan was to bring this to discuss to the Board of Supervisors. I want everyone to understand, New York Alert will give us a lot of the features that have been brought up and discussed over the last week on notification. It is a very good program, and some counties are using it. We have looked at another program, which is on New York State contract. It also offers a lot of good features. New York Alert has people go in and register, and I think anybody who is sitting in this room, go to nyalert.gov and register, because it does provide the information that's released by the state, and eventually it will provide information released by us. After the event, I contacted the director, the administrator of the NY Alert, and asked for a password and a username so that we could get in, and they agreed to assist us on going through the program. Our plan is to continue moving forward with some type of a reverse 911 system, whether it be continue with the NY Alert or if it's a commercially provided reverse 911 system. The commercially provided reverse 911 will address some issues that the NY Alert program will not, which includes special needs. People who can go in and register that they have special needs, we would be able to know that they're in an alert area and assist us with dealing with that. We would also be able to offer it to all of the towns. Now, again, the NY Alert will also allow you to offer it to the towns. But the towns will have to be the ones that coordinate that through the emergency management office. Yes, sir?
What would be the difference, if any, between what you're talking about and what's currently being offered in Berkshire County? Because I can tell you, as a supervisor of a town adjoining Berkshire County, I had 9 years as a supervisor, have never received as many calls about an incident in this county as I have about this, because all of their friends were notified before the town supervisor was notified.
And I can add to that, Canaan, all the calls came from Massachusetts,
right?
Stockbridge, Richard, Ray Barrington. We got calls and our kind of calls saying, how come they know about it?
Right.
We don't.
Basically, every county around Columbia County has some sort or some form of reverse 911. And
so
it's
well, are we talking about mirroring what they have, or
I don't know the exact program that Berkshire County has. I can't speak on that. It would be the same idea of what happened in Berkshire and what happened in Rensselaer County.
And what is the cost of that program?
I only looked at one company to get a quote, and it was approximately $35,000 per year.
That's the one that's on the state contract.
That is the one that's on the state contract. That is, and I'm going to be honest, that is the only company that I've had the opportunity to sit down, go through a demo, and see the product. So I'm not going to sit here and say that is the product that we should go with. It is on.
If we were to make a decision to go that way, what kind of timetable does it take to implement a program like that?
I'm only going to speak about the company that I saw and give you their answer. They were up and running in White Plains within an hour for Hurricane Irene when the company called. So they do have the capability to get up and running very quickly. Now, just one second. They are utilizing commercially bought phone numbers. They do the same thing that the telemarketers do. They upload that information. We would then be able to upload the information from 911, which would be our own information, and upload that. One of the concerns that was brought up with the NY Alert is we would be responsible for cleaning up the data, and I have had a conversation with Rob. They do that currently, so that may not be as big of an issue. However, the private company will do that for us. So, again, there are pros and cons to both of them. I think that at this point, obviously I know this is very important right now, but we need to not jump at the very first thing, and we need to do our, as Rob likes to say, our due diligence and make sure that we look at everything that is out there. It may be advantageous to perhaps pump some more resources into getting the NY Alert system up and running that was initially set up when we first started it to get county employees on board to notify them of situations. Then our plan was to roll it out to the communities. It is available. I don't want to mislead anybody. It is available to everybody in the county to go ahead and enroll right now. But our ramp up and our publicization of it wasn't going to be until after the county was completely on board.
Was the $35,000 for the all of the county, for all residents of the county?
All residents.
So including all the town and all the county residents.
Correct. Okay. This one particular company offered that we could allow the towns, individual towns, to be able to utilize it. If you have a water boil issue, if you have a road closure because you're paving, things like that, you would be able to utilize that.
Tom, is the New York Alert, is that hardwire, or is that you have to have cell access or internet?
To enter your information?
Yeah.
To get into the system and enter your information, you do have to go onto the computer to do it.
And see, that's where I would see some limitations for a lot of people. We'll get into the broadband thing, but I see some limitations for those who are in the far reaches being able to access that system and load their information in. But before we go too far, I don't want to be critical of you guys. I really want to congratulate everyone here because these people are the ones that put themselves on the front line before they knew what kind of dangers were or weren't there. So I certainly want to congratulate you on that. But on this responder thing, it's really serious, and I think it's something we need to expedite and look at. Not only the New York system and the access that people will have that don't have broadband or even cell coverage, and look at that. We probably would want to look at something that's either a hardline system or something, you know, you have this testing that comes on your TV and something like that.
The NY Alert program, I will certainly find out if there's a number that you can call, or perhaps, Rob, maybe you know that up there.
I believe there is, but I don't want to say that.
Yeah, I will definitely look into it and let you know. I do know that this other program does allow, what it does is when we initially would sign up for it, it does what they call a robocall to the entire county. Tells everybody that the county is now on board with the program, and it gives them a phone number and a website that they could go to enroll. We could also send out the website link to everybody within the county, but it does offer a phone.
Just to clear up your question, you must log on through a computer. It can be any computer. You don't have to have a computer. You can go to a library and log on or something like that. But two, it'll notify you by whatever means you tell it to. So the cell phone, hardline, computer, pager, whatever media you want it to notify you, it'll notify
you of
all those medias.
So, that's Mark Ferrari from State.
You're not locked into a hard line. You're locked into whatever you
ask. The New York Alert program has now. Are we entering the data? Is that what we've been doing?
We have to enter the data for county employees.
And what about if we move forward past that, residents?
Residents would have to go, at this point, because we're unsure if they have a phone number, would have to go to the NY Alert webpage and then enroll themselves.
But first 911.
We would then also be able to upload the data from 911 to be able to do complete reverse 911 phone calls, even for people who are not enrolled.
At what point would we be able to do that?
Technically, since we finally got our username and password last Friday, we could probably do that now.
We've been talking about that and why earlier, which I was very excited about when I first came on here. Now, which is now over 2 years ago, but that NY alert was what we were hanging our hat on. So I don't quite understand why we haven't been able to move forward on that. And that I did understand, I didn't think we were going to be able to keep the town stuff on that. And then there was that it had to be all set up with first.
Columbia County Emergency Management Office is the lead agency for the NY Alert. So therefore, if the town of Clarvick wanted to participate, they would have to go through us. Not meaning that you would need to go through us to send out the messages. You would need to have an agreement with us, which then in turn would allow you to do it.
Right, but I couldn't do that because you weren't ready.
Not because we weren't ready. We were given the information from NY Alert. Their way of uploading the information is to fill out a spreadsheet. So for all county employees, and there's probably well over 1,000, we have to manually go in and type in everybody's information, their home phone numbers, their cell phone numbers, their email addresses, their mailing addresses. All of that information needs to be manually put in. If something is wrong with it, and as a matter of fact, I did departments yesterday, out of 600 entries, 292 came back as being incorrect. They don't recognize they don't recognize Prairieville. They don't recognize Mellonville. So when I put those in and they're kicked back out, we now have to go back through the system, find out who the person is, go back in and figure out how are we going to put this person in so it comes up correctly. It's a very tedious process.
So the main difference, or the thing between New York Alerts and the private system that you're speaking of, is the ability to automatically do the upload, and that's the main.
What would happen is, I'm only going to talk about one system. With that system, the way that they do it, I would send a link to all county employees. They click on it, they fill out their information, and it's automatically into the system. We don't have to do anything. We can then go back in, and if somebody needs to have something changed, I can search through. And if Robin Andrews needs to change her email address, either you can go in and change it, or if you don't have access to a computer, I can go in and change it for you. Currently, we don't have that capability. If I get a new county employee, if I had five more slips, which I got 3 at the beginning of this week, I now have to put those 3 people in, upload those to the state, wait for them to accept it, have it come back, then I have to put their email address in, the department that they're with, upload it again to the state, have it accepted. And if you don't have an email address, you can't enroll through the system. You have to have an email address.
Just in the interest of maximizing who you reach in a minimum amount of time, we know we have broadband limitations. We know we have cell phone limitations and where people can get reception. People don't use computers all the time. A reverse 911 is actually going to dial the landline in your home. Am I correct on that?
Correct.
Okay, so that, if you wanted to reach the maximum amount of people, isn't that the system you want to use, particularly when we don't have a television station or radio station or anything?
Yes, sir. And I'll tell you that, just speaking of county employees, they don't like to give up that information.
That's part of
the telephone number?
They don't want to give up information to have it put into the system.
That's part of why the process took so long as well, is because Tom and some of the other members that were working on this had to keep contacting people, and we only got half of the county employees that filed to do it.
I have a stack this thick on my desk that we just were working on. We were actually working on this Monday and Tuesday of last week. We have an intern who's working at our office, and we asked her to go through and start going. I have a list this thick of people who did not put an email address, and we specifically said when we sent it out that you need to have an email address.
So, Tom, you're saying in Berkshire County, assuming they have a similar system, that the only people notified in Berkshire County were those people who voluntarily registered for this system?
No, sir. What I'm saying is there are two types of systems. There is a reverse 911. Reverse 911 requires the information from the 911 center to be uploaded to whatever type of program you utilize. Okay. That will call everybody who has a landline in the county.
Okay. It's a public telephone number.
Correct. The public other part of it is people going in and registering a cell phone, okay. Registering...
But the landline piece would cover 90% plus
correct.
The residents.
Most people aren't going to answer their cell phone in the middle of the night or a text message in the middle
so
of the night.
That's the answer to your question. Yeah.
And whether
think about the school districts. I mean, some of the school districts are using
global
this system when they want to notify all the parents and the kids that there's no school that day. They're making phone calls to landline.
And correct me if I'm wrong, no matter whether you use New York or you purchase the other system that has more ability, it still requires another agreement. Well, our agreement is not going to cover reverse 911, correct?
Okay.
With New York Alert, that's not what we signed up with them for.
Well,
that's
they may accept our information, but we have to be up and Rob and I are having training because at this point, even though we have access, we have to call them and have them walk us through it. Rob and I have training scheduled for next Tuesday to know how to be able to send out the alert and. Department heads were trained on this a year ago, and when we received the way that we needed to put all the information in, I said, we have over 1,000 employees with, you know, different addresses, and they said, the only way to do this is to manually enter the information. And it's, I don't want to make it an excuse, but it's very, very time consuming. When you upload it and then you get 300 of them dumped back out, now you have to go through all your sheets
you
and find out
to
who
do
are
that,
they.
Tom, if you used Rob's data, right?
We would still need to do that for county employees.
You wouldn't have their telephone numbers in there?
But they're not going to be listed as, that's the problem. They would not be listed as county employees. They would be listed
as residents. There's two different things here. There's reverse 911, which is a whole different thing within New York Alert, and then there's what we signed up for.
Okay.
And it's two separate things. Reverse 911 is going to give a call to the number, whether they want it or not.
Right.
And there's a way for them to sign out of it, but that's why we feel we absolutely need it. We're behind the times on this situation, and we have to move on it. I was just going to say, they will get the call, whether they want it or not. It'll have the recording. And they'll be notified.
Yeah, I just want to go back. Reverse, did you have more, sir? Because
I was just wondering the cost factor of the labor, the amount of labor you're paying to do this New York Alert as opposed to the reverse 911. They're spending money now in manpower to do all this incident.
Currently, after the incident, I contacted NY Alert just to find out how many people. My initial call was, hey, we had a major incident. We're not able to send out anything, and nothing was sent out because we don't have access to the system yet. She said, well, you need to finish uploading your information, and then, you know, we can roll it out to you, and we'll get training in. And I said, we can't do that. I need access now. And she said, well, I will give you access. However, if you have something that comes up before your training, you're going to have to call us and we'll walk you through what you're doing. I said, okay, at least it's something. It is very labor intensive. However, the message to the community as a whole would go out with the input, with the upload of our 911 data. The issue with not being able to upload that yet is we have not been completely set up with them at this point in time because it is time-consuming. Yes, ma'am?
You have a question about the reverse 911. You said that's only to landlines.
Like no.
My children don't have landlines.
Okay. Some of the different companies, again, I'm only speaking of the one which is on state contract, that company does what telemarketers do. They go out and buy the phone numbers the same way all the lovely telemarketers who call you.
My cell phone numbers.
Yes, you can. You most certainly can, because I got a call earlier today about taking a cruise, and I almost took it. You absolutely can. Yes, they can buy the cell phone numbers. Any place where you go, and like if you're applying for a mortgage, if whoever you apply with the mortgage sells that information and your cell phone number is on there, that information is out there.
Can you opt into it if they don't have, if the telemarketer doesn't have it? I say opt into the system.
You can, yes, you can. What we would do, whether it's NY Alert or this other company, is you would go to the webpage and just sign in, or call the 1-800 number and give them your information, and they would input all of it for you.
If I may interject, we could probably spend 2 hours talking about this program. I think there's a couple other things that we need to talk about. This incident, we have some testing that was done, and I think we have officials that have come down from the state, very nice to come down. So let's hear them at the end. We can kind of talk a little bit, take a few more questions, and certainly you know that we're going to be talking about reverse 911, New York Alert, some sort of program. We truly realize that we need to be doing something a little quicker. So we're going to be having more discussions about that soon. So, okay. Bill, I don't know if you want to bring something up.
What I'm going to do is ask all the state agencies to come up. My counterpart in the state, Mark Ferrari, he's Region 2 Director of New York State Office of Emergency Management. And I'll let Nancy introduce the, and I know Keith Gertz, he's from New York State DEC, gentleman with a red shirt. Yep. I'll let Nancy introduce the state health people.
Okay, we have Maureen Chupp from New York State Department of Health, Joe Crua, and Jan Gorman.
Storm.
The next part of the next phase is when Matt Franklin arrived from New York State DEC, which was early on in the evening. Matt Franklin, We had a discussion after the first explosion. What do we need to do? How do we need to do it? We really kind of looked at what our exposures were. At that point, Matt said he was going to request the EPA to come out, do some real-time air monitoring. He was going to notify his office. He wanted to do some other type of sampling. And Matt is from the DEC Spills Department, and he was there roughly 1 o'clock in the morning on. We also asked state OEM to give us all the assets. Part of extinguishing the fire, we couldn't put the fire out. We didn't have enough foam in the county to put the fire out. We requested a crash truck from Albany Airport. The crash truck, they had one that was down. They couldn't take it because then they would have had to shut the airport down. We then made a request through state OEM, through the State Watch Center, to have the nearest National Guard response, which was Stratton Air Force Base in Schenectady. So they rolled that unit out with 251 gallons of foam on it, concentrated foam, with a pickup truck loaded with roughly another 75 gallons of foam. And the county foam bank was utilized. We roughly used somewhere in the neighborhood of about 450 gallons of concentrated foam to put the fire out. And they drove that from Stratton right down the interstate right to our site. And they did a great job, and they helped. Before we get into the state people, did anybody have any questions for John regarding the fire?
I just want to make a comment. It's our unpaid professionals. I can't say enough about these people. They mean a lot to me. You need to be proud of your local responders. I know you are. It was very dynamic. We had to make decisions that some people are going to spend weeks reviewing. We had to make those decisions in a matter of seconds. And I can honestly tell you, with just minutes, we would have lost some firefighters.
John, I have a question.
Sure.
John, what's the initial first responder call that we have a disaster in place? Who's the first person on the scene that makes that call?
Maybe I don't understand, but the chief is in charge. It's a home rule state. It's chief, a fire, local fire chief.
Local fire chief.
Starts to make the calls. Our office is there to support them. We were there early on. And right to the very end, the chief stayed in charge. And that's how the New York State laws work. Seemed to work well.
He's the trigger person.
That's correct. And maybe I got my arm around a little bit once in a while to make some decisions, but that's kind of how that works.
All right, thank you.
At this point, I'd like to, I don't care which state agency would like to go first. I don't know if you've decided, but if somebody wants to do Do we want to discuss the news release that State Department of Environmental Conservation put out?
Yeah. Okay, sure. As Bill mentioned, we responded to this site probably around 12:31 o'clock. We were notified through the emergency spill hotline. We have staff that are on call 24/7, and we responded to this spill. Clearly, it was a big incident. We realized that right away. There was a lot of concern because this was a facility that processed oil that contained certain amounts of PCBs. And so essentially, our role was not, we hired a contractor to help with the deconning of the equipment. And we also hired a company to take some wipe soot samples early on to try to determine if there was any PCBs in the soot that resulted from the fire. And we got the first sampling results back later on Thursday, probably around 2 o'clock. And every single one of the soot samples came back non-detect for PCBs. This was outstanding news. It was around the same time where the fire was just about totally extinguished. And so that brought, that reduced the size of the emergency at that point, at least in our minds. The day after, I think it was Friday, it was decided that we would take some additional wipe samples from throughout the county. This was at the behest of the county. And we had our contractor go with, I believe, county personnel to different parts of the county. And we took another 22 wipe samples and analyzed those. And again, every one of those samples came back ND.
I have just a question. I understand that at some point while this was going on, there was a large plume of smoke coming out of the room, at that point unanalyzed.
Correct.
At some point, your analysis was conducted and you produced the results that you said, which is that there was no PCB and PCB. My question to Bill is, and this is the question I'm being asked by my residents, had that plume been determined to be toxic, what would the county and the town have done to protect the, to notify, and not notify, we already talked about that, to protect the residents if that cloud had been determined to be toxic and dangerous? What would we have done?
The part of the training that we receive is that, and we've exercised it many times, including when you were chairman, the county utilizes, or the local fire company uses their assets. At that point, the county steps in and utilizes every asset they have at their disposal, which is our county health department, DPW, fire companies, hazmat teams. Once we get overwhelmed, meaning we don't have the resources or the experts to make those decisions, we then ask for state assistance, which is the state health department, state DEC, to come in and assist us with giving us accurate information and making decisions that help us protect the general public. We made those decisions early on, and we requested state assets through the State Watch Center, through MARC, to have these representatives come into the county and assist us in making these tough decisions.
I'm just wondering what we would have done under worst case scenario. It turned out okay. You know, we didn't have any serious long-term impact. But had it gone the other way, which we didn't know at the time, what would the county and the town have done to protect the residents? I mean, we would evacuate to Massachusetts. I mean, what would we have done?
The recommendations were made without knowledge of what was in the soot. And I believe we probably wouldn't do anything different. Knowing the wind direction, the recommendations that were made for people to stay indoors, to turn off air conditioners.
It would have been done in a stepwise fashion. The initial thing was to keep people inside. That was the initial thing, because you wouldn't have an exposure then, or minimal exposure. The next step is to get the sample results. Here, the news was fantastic. We're not seeing any PCBs. Had we had seen something, then we would look at those levels, determine what type of action was needed, and advise appropriate. It may have been something as simple as don't touch the surfaces at this point in time, but it's all based on the sample results. And one of the quickest, the samples that Keith and his guys ordered was very quick turnaround and would tell us very important information. And that is that we were not seeing PCBs. I mean,
I appreciate
so,
that.
So it's hard to answer. It would be a stepwise.
No, I guess it goes back to communication, because all the things you're talking about really come back to advising people to stay indoors or not to eat whatever. But that all involves being able to tell them that, you know, at the end of the day, other than knocking on their door and putting them in a car and taking them out of there. I mean, except for that, it's communication. So had it gone badly, we would have been a bit up the creek, because we weren't able to reach a lot of people and tell them whatever the issue was.
Well,
whatever.
Immediately, I know that the residents in Kinderhook that were notified via the news. So the news wasn't right immediately, certainly, but people did get the message to stay indoors, turn off their air conditioning.
Didn't work. Believe me, the public media did not work in my town.
So, Bill, you were saying that you would assess the situation depending on what level it is and then call the state once you exhaust your assets. To what level of a degree of an incident has to be before you realize that, and what's the response time of the state to you once you call?
My response time, I called them when I got to East Chatham on my way, because I knew the site. I was aware of what that site was in the county. It's an LEPC site, which is a site that we monitor. They have to turn over what chemicals they have. We knew it was there. We didn't know the actual quantities that were in there, and some of the chemicals that were in there we weren't aware of because of their reporting. But I called Mark, and when I got to East Chatham, I got there. He was there 45 minutes behind me, but he was already on the phone requesting state assets. And we had the director from state OEM at the site by 1:30. And we were getting anything we asked for. And the governor had already made the decision, whatever Columbia County wants, you send Columbia County. We'll deal with the other issues later.
Bill, so, I just want to say that we weren't dealing with field supervisors or managers. We were dealing with directors and commissioners. This incident required that response from the state, and they did come down, and they sent their best people to cut through whatever red tape there was. And, you know, to your question before, Art, we asked those questions, and they said, you know, that smoke cloud is in the air right now. And they said that they gave us exactly what they gave us, and we put that out as best we could. We need reverse 911.
Yes, Jen.
I had a couple of things here. On your report from your office, Department of Environmental Conservation, there's a couple of things I'd like to bring out here. First of all, in paragraph 3, you state detectable levels of PCBs form the basis to determine the need to conduct additional tests for other potentially hazardous substances. Also, site information indicates the fire involved primarily containers of petroleum-based oil. Under the fourth paragraph, it says, therefore, no additional tests are necessary to evaluate people's exposure off-site. I'll use that word off-site. Then down below there, on the fifth paragraph down, it speaks about most of the material that burned appears to have contained no or low levels of PCBs, as confirmed by the absence of detectable levels of PCBs in 32 wipe samples collected near the fire and in the surrounding community.